ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month. That's Downpour.com. On this episode, Sun Crown's musical talents span the world. Davey Copeland talks about his new album From Budapest, Hungary, and Arthur Miller's famous autobiography After the Fall, and our audiobook feature right after the news you want to know.
In a torn up town, no postcode envy, but every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom. Stains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams. But everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royal.
Hello, I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. They often say that less is more, and nowhere is that truer than Jerry Seinfeld's internet series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I don't know if you've seen this. I've watched them all. I think it's hilarious. But Seinfeld's series of him driving in classic cars with other comedians and getting coffee is hilarious. If you really want to see true humor, watch the episode where he and Ricky Gervais were driving in his car, and Gervais freaks out about every 10 seconds about Jerry's driving. So it's pretty funny. So he's coming back with a second season, more comedians, Tina Fey, Jay Leno, Patton Oswalt, love that guy, Louis C.K., they're all going to be on the show, and new cars as well. Has anyone seen the show?
I have.
I've heard great things about it.
It is hilarious. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld, what's the deal? He's funny, but the comedians he has on, it's a great range. But the side bonus is if you're a car guy, and I'm not a supercar guy, but I'm not Jay Leno, right. There's some pretty neat cars.
Or Cyrus Emerson, who is a big car guy.
That's true. There are some pretty nifty cars. This season, he's going to have a Pontiac GTO Judge, a Fiat 500 Jolly, which I hope he doesn't have Patton Oswalt in that one because there won't be enough room for Jerry, a Porsche 356 Coupe. Sorry about that, Patton. Love you. A DeLorean DMC-12 even. So it looks pretty good. I saw the trailer for it. I'm pretty excited.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. You know, I have seen it. I saw it when it first came out. And matter of fact, I saw it with Cyrus. And it was on the Crackle app. And at first I was amazed that Crackle got a star that big to do an internet thing. And then when I saw it, we saw the episode with Alec Baldwin, which was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Alec Baldwin was actually so much funnier than Jerry.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know he did all these impressions. He did impressions of Jack Nicholson and, you know, all kinds of different people. But it was so funny, in fact, that I watched other episodes, and then there were some just hysterical ones, man.
And so is it all scripted? It's not spontaneous?
No, it's totally spontaneous.
It's totally spontaneous.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's literally
talented comedians.
Literally Jerry Seinfeld and another comedian driving in his car and getting coffee. And then just talking about whatever comes to mind.
Yeah, well, once again, I'll put it out there. If Jerry wants to drive my MGA or Model A, you know, he can take Charlie Stanton down to Dutch Brothers.
That would be very entertaining.
And,
I think we should do that.
Yeah, it was the Ricky Gervais episode that got me on because I saw a little gif of Gervais freaking out in the car. And, that sounds kind of funny. And I like Jerry Seinfeld. I think one of the great things that works about it is Seinfeld not trying to be funny. It's literally just him hanging out with his friends in cars. And the other comedians that he has on, like Alec Baldwin, it's really good. It's really funny. I can't recommend it enough. I suggest watching it.
Yeah, the new one is right up your alley too, right, Jerry? How to Kill Superman.
Oh yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. The whole episode is it him and Oswald? I think Patton Oswald maybe, because he's in, you know, as everybody knows, Patton Oswald's a big comic book guy too, and they literally spend most of the episode discussing, yeah, how would you kill Superman? So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, okay. Vegas may be a long way for Jerry Seinfeld to drive, but it might be worth it if he's got a good chatting comedian partner to go to there. If he does go to Vegas, he can check out Britney Spears.
Oh.
She kicked off her much-hyped Piece of Me residency at the Las Vegas Planet Hollywood Resort. And this is her new show, and she's kind of following in the footsteps of a lot of, you know, big-time celebrities that go over to Vegas and do shows, like Celine Dion. She had a very... very successful show over there.
Right, and Elton John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I hear for this one, unlike Celine Dion, she was accused of lip syncing potentially for this
one? Yeah, a little bit of a scandal. The thing was, you know, is she singing live? Like, I mean, there's very complicated dance moves. Most people don't do. I mean, when you go to see a concert, most of the time, they're not singing the whole thing live anyway. So she's probably not singing most of it. I'm sure there are elements of her doing some live singing. And so the reactions have been mixed, but I mean, it should be a pretty exciting show. She comes into it. She descends from the ceiling in a futuristic gilded cage wearing what seems like a nude bodysuit. And
she did it again.
Yeah. Oops. Oh, no.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I heard a lot about this building up to it, and I actually saw somebody leaked on YouTube an isolated copy of her microphone. And yeah, I think a lot of it is not being sung.
Right. I was just watching a Saturday Night Live episode where you could tell the parts where the woman sang and then it was the backing track. I mean, you can hear it. It's just because when they do these dances, it's hard to not sound like very breathy.
Oh, I imagine. Although they're really working out.
Right. But, how can you actually sing and do that?
In all fairness, you know, is Britney Spears really the person you go to sing, like, to hear amazing songs sung? No, she's an entertainer, right? I mean, it's the whole package. Dancing,
I think it's a visual thing for this show.
Yeah, she looks a lot better than Elvis, so.
Yeah, and just want to throw my two cents in there. I mean, Christy's right. Most acts, especially if there's a lot of dancing involved, even Michael Jackson, you know, some of it is going to be choreographed where they're going to use, just for the sound quality, they're going to use a pre-mixed tape.
Right.
And I don't know if it's Memorex or not, but they're going to use it. But there is something that's amazing is Lady Gaga, when she did her HBO special, she did the whole thing with all those dance numbers. She did not lip sync at all.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Right.
Well, she's got real talent.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding. I don't know. Anyway, Britney Spears is going to be doing 96 shows over the next 2 years. So we'll see. I mean, it might be a career, you know, it's a big career risk, really. We'll see if it pays off for her.
What was this was her first show, right, that she did?
Back in December, yeah.
Okay, so what was what was the general feel for it? Was it well received?
It was mixed. It's mixed. Hmm. And I think people were, you know, thinking like, is it live? I don't know. What's going on? And so, well,
one element is that in Vegas, a lot of the live shows are expected to be pretty racy. And I know for this one, it's pretty tame, relatively. I mean, she's a 32-year-old mother of two, and somehow she doesn't quite exude that same sexuality that other shows in Vegas.
Right. The Celine Dion show was so racy. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hey, Britney Spears, I would love to go see her show, and she's a talented musician. She tried her hand at acting, but it really wasn't her cup of tea. But I'll tell you, the French really have a corner of the market on this.
Mm. They do. You know, everybody knows French movies, French cinema. They're like synonymous, you know? I mean, they go hand in hand. And here's something exciting that we could all participate in with French movies. MyFrenchFilmFestival.com for all countries. The festival will be held on the internet and platforms according to territories, including iTunes, in more than 80 countries.
Wow.
Yeah, so everybody can check these films out. And not only there, but then the films will also be available for 400 airline companies via their partner Sky for in-flight projections, as well as more than 1,500 art houses worldwide.
I went on the website to check this out, and I love foreign films. And I particularly like French films because, you know, the language is so beautiful and they do quirky stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're everybody, you know, tries to stereotype them as like, you know, all French movies are, you know, steamy romance, you know, naughty. But they make these really, really cool comedies.
They have a funny sense of humor when I think about the ones that I've seen. Kind of a quirky way of.
It's a different twist on what we would do.
Well, it's not just the comedies and romances. Some of my favorite action movies actually have come out of France. Luc Besson, you know, the film director, and he's used Jean Reno several times, La Femme Nikita. I think that was
French Connection.
The French Connection.
That was a French film.
Was it? Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I've only seen the Popeye Doyle, right?
That's, yeah.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah, but it was a French movie.
Oh, right on. And what was the one with Eric Stoltz? Killing Zoe, about a group of criminals that rob a bank in France. Yeah. To this day, one of the most interesting independent movies I've seen.
Makes me wish that I was fluent in French so I didn't have to read the subtitles.
That's an interesting point, Maya, that you bring that up, the subtitles, because, you know, a lot of people tell me that they would like to watch this movie. Like my son, for example, he's just like, I'm just not going to do the subtitles. I like them, and the reason I like the subtitles is because – and I don't know if anybody in our listening audience out there feels the same way, but for me, in this day and age where everything is so compartmentalized, you know, where everything's like 10 seconds, 15 seconds, you know, 15 minutes, we find ourselves, especially me, it's just like you got the computer on, the TV's going, you're on the phone, you're texting somebody, mm-hmm. and you see a movie and you don't really give it a shot.
Yeah.
Now, I find with, you know, not just French films, but any film that
subtitled
has subtitles, it forces you to watch the movie.
Right. That's a really good point. Like, so you have to use more senses than just having it go in the background and checking your iPhone, because you have to be paying attention and really looking at the screen.
Right. And you see the screen, you see the movie, and you know, I've seen so many movies. I can't tell you how many movies I've seen that just turned out to be just so phenomenal. I never would have given a chance if I could hear the dialogue in English.
See, and that's the same thing with me. You know, I'm a big gamer, and I have a big setup, you know, where I have a gaming TV, and then I have another TV with a Blu-ray and everything. And I have movies that I put on in the background, but I can't watch a subtitle film while I'm playing. And it's the same thing. There have been a number of movies just in the last couple of weeks that I've loved and really enjoyed that I would not have got a chance to if they hadn't been subtitled, because they would have just been in the background.
Yeah. Right. You know, we love French films, and my friend FrenchFilmFestival.com. We'll be having this festival. We can all watch these films wherever we are. At the end, when they do the final voting, there will be 11 journalists from major foreign dailies, along with the people involved at the festival in Paris, where, you know, there will actually be people in art houses watching movies as well. And they're all going to vote for the winning films. The winning films will be aired on Air France flights for a duration of 6 months. So
how cool is that?
And yeah, everybody's going to be looking forward
to
that.
Another thing, you know, to pass on to all of our listeners is that these films are free. You don't have to pay for anything.
Even better.
It's a real gift.
Yeah, Maya, what would you think if they did this for the Ashland Independent Film Festival? I mean, I know you're a big supporter of them.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed the film festival for, I think, the last 5 years or so. I should check. Being a volunteer there. And I think that's a really great idea, because it has grown so much in popularity that I know there are a lot of people that aren't always able to make it, and it would be so exciting for them to be able to watch some of it.
You know what? I think you're onto something, and I would be behind that 100%. And, you know, I would I'll mention that to Anne, who runs it, because we went to the a couple of films, and there was a lot of films, well, not a lot, but maybe three or four that we didn't get to see, because when we got there, you know, they have that 15-minute rule. You know, if you don't, they just sell at the theater.
Right.
And, you know, this would be an opportunity for everybody to see the films. And I don't think, you know, you're right about it being so popular that I don't think they have to worry about, you know, not selling tickets so people can watch it at home. I think it will increase it.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people out there that, one, you know, just don't have transportation or are doing something else, and they would love to watch the films. And after all, that's the whole premise behind it.
Is not, to get these films seen.
Yeah, is that the artists want their films to be seen.
Yeah, and there are so many films every year that even if you fill up a full schedule and see a film for every time slot every day, you still don't get a chance to see all
of them. Can't see them all.
So if there are some that are on your list that you just didn't get a chance to see, then afterward maybe you could check them out.
I think that's a great idea, too. You know, for the other reason, too, is that sometimes these are the only opportunities to see some of these films. It's not, you know, some of these films, it's not like you can go pick them up at Safeway, you know, at the checkout line. You know, they're only around for a little while. And I would 100% support that.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And I do like the Ashland Film Festival. I went to, with my daughter, to the party thing they had last year that they do at the Mark Anthony.
The Ashland Springs.
Yeah, formerly the Mark Anthony.
I still call it that too.
And it was cool. And I'll tell you a funny little story, a little anecdote there. I was there with my daughter and, you know, everybody's having a good time and, you know, they're drinking wine. Everybody's drinking wine and mingling and stuff like that. And she tells me, she goes, "Dad, you got to mingle. Get out there and mingle, right?" So I'm like, "Yeah, okay, okay." Right. And so I don't really know, you know, people there. So there's this one woman there who I thought was Ellen Huff from KSKQ, because I didn't know Ellen all that well. And, you know, just from the silhouette, you know, she looked, you know, like the, you know, same hairstyle and same age. So anyway, and she looked over at me, and to make a long story even longer, so I'm finally like, okay, yeah. So Casey sees me again and she goes like, "You got to mingle, dude, have some fun." So I'm like, okay. So I go over to this woman and she's standing there and I go, "Hey, how's it going?" And she goes, "Good, how you doing?" "Fine," you know, and I said, you know, "Are you going to see any of the films here this year, you know?" And or something to that effect. Like, "Have you seen any of the films that, you know, that have shown yet? Or what's your favorite? You know, are you going to see a film?" And she was standing there and she goes, "Yes, I'm going to see a film." And I go, "Oh, cool. What's your favorite?" And she says, "Well, I guess it would be the one that I made." She was a filmmaker and she was there to promote her film. And I go, "Right."
I think Ellen was at that party, though.
You know what? Yeah, I'm pretty sure she was.
Well, neither of them are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so I guess you're forgiven there, right?
Well, for the time being.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I didn't realize this, but in order to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you have to have been around for, do you guys know? How many years?
25 years?
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. So it's your only, artists are only eligible if 25 years after the release of their first album or single. So Nirvana just became eligible since their first single, Love Buzz, came out in 1988.
Yeah.
And it was just announced who this year's inductees are. It's Nirvana. And then Kiss, they've been eligible for the last 15 years.
Yeah, why haven't they been?
I don't know. They didn't get the nod until now, but they're
on the list. They got a football team now, so.
Well, yeah, that must have been what pushed them over the edge. Well, we were going to let them in, but they bought an Arena League team, so I guess we kind of got
them. They qualify. Linda Ronstadt, she recently actually announced that she's battling Parkinson's disease, so she's not going to be able to sing, but she was. She's going to be honored at least. Peter Gabriel, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame as a member of Genesis in 2010, but he wasn't able to attend the ceremony then because he was on a solo tour. He says, "This time I will definitely go. I'm very grateful to have gotten in again. It's a huge honor since it's your whole body of work and not just a specific project."
So he's being inducted as a solo artist now?
Mm-hmm, oh, okay. Exactly, yeah.
Anybody else?
Paul and Oates.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they're in.
You know what? And that surprised me, but, you know, one, that Paul and Oates has been around that long. Mm-hmm. And two, because they're like, at least for me, they're, you know, fond memories of Paul and Oates, you know, 25 years ago, and, you know, with all their, you know, Maneater and all those.
Anybody else?
Yeah, the E Street Band, they're going to be given the award for musical excellence. And then Beatles manager Brian Epstein and the original Rolling Stones manager Andrew Olgam, they're going to both receive the award for non-performers. Oh. So it's interesting. The ceremony, it rotates on a three-year cycle between New York, Cleveland, and L.A. And this next one in April is going to be in New York City. And it's the first time the general public is going to be able to attend the event there since it's being held in a big arena there. And it's going to be the largest ceremony in the history of the Hall of Fame.
Cool. Yeah, we're supposed to have another Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, hopefully on the show here pretty soon, John Densmore.
That's right.
Mm, exciting.
Aren't the doors in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I know this year's event's going to be held at Brooklyn's Barclays Center, which is very cool. I'm glad to see Brooklyn, you know, finally coming up a little bit. There you go, a little shout out, all right?
I think it's kind of funny, though, that it alternates between L.A., New York, and Cleveland. Because when I think of L.A. and New York, the next city on my list is Cleveland.
Well, Cleveland? Because Cleveland is where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame started.
Oh, okay.
And the reason they do it now in LA and New York is for the TV market.
That makes sense. And makes sense. Attendees, yeah, because, you know, a lot of stars live in either LA or New York.
Here's a little trivia fact for you. You like trivia, Jerry?
Yes, I do.
That is where Drew Carey's show, that's where they came up with the
Cleveland Rocks.
Cleveland Rocks.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, I thought this whole time I always thought it was in Seattle.
No, that's the that Paul Allen built that
Jimi Hendrix experience.
The art or the music experience. Exactly. Well, you know, musicians aren't the only one that have their own Hall of Fame. There's a baseball Hall of Fame. There's a football Hall of Fame. And if there was a Hall of Fame for thieves, this man would be in it. Have you guys heard of Ronnie Biggs? You ever heard of the Great Train Robbery?
I have heard of the Great Train Robbery.
Hey, everybody's heard of the Great Train Robbery. Yeah. Ronnie Biggs was a petty criminal who basically transformed his life by being part of one of the most famous heists in the modern era. He was part of a crew of at least 12 guys that they know of that robbed a Glasgow to London Royal Mail train August 8th, 1963. And it was really sneaky. Like, they tricked the driver into stopping by switching the signals and everything. And they made off with roughly $7.3 million at the time, worth about $50 million today.
Wow.
Now, Biggs was not the mastermind of the heist. He was just one member of the crew, but he turned out to be the most famous member because most of the members were caught and jailed relatively quickly after the heist. But about 18 months after he was arrested and jailed, he escaped from a London prison.
He knows how to pull those rigs.
He's a sneaky guy. Not only did he escape, he managed to avoid capture for 35 years, I think. He moved around. I know at one point he was in Panama. He went to France, then he went to Australia, then he went to Panama, and then finally settled in Rio de Janeiro because there's no extradition treaty between Brazil and the UK. Now, extradition treaty be darned, several other people still tried to get him home. He was kidnapped at one point by a couple of bounty hunters who smuggled him out of the country, but they ended up in, where was it? Barbados. But again, Barbados has no extradition treaty with Great Britain.
So he went back?
Here's what happened. He decided when he got really old and he was getting fragile, and he lived in Rio de Janeiro, like I said, for a long time, and he would regale, for a price, he would regale tourists with the story of what he did, and he sold t-shirts and other memorabilia and stuff. I hung out with Ronnie Biggs. But as he got older and he started getting sick, he had a series of strokes and illnesses. He, you know, longed to see his home country again, so he agreed to turn himself in. I think it was the Sun, the tabloid newspaper, sent a plane and a detective, and they picked him up and flew him back to England. And as soon as he got off the plane, they arrested him and put him in jail. And he stayed in jail for a little while, and then he, you know, kept getting sicker and sicker. And then 2008, they released him to a nursing home. I guess they figured he was no longer a danger to the public. And he just recently passed away.
What a story. There should be a movie about that.
There, I think there is, actually. The Great Train Robbery.
Well, it's not specifically about Ronnie Briggs.
So, you know, Biggs, before he passed away, he wrote an autobiography, promoted it pretty heavily, and I actually think I'm going to find that book and read it, because it's one of those cases where truth really is stranger than fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And if you thought Ronnie Briggs was an interesting character, Chrissy's got a story about Gabriele D'Annunzio, an Italian poet, serial seducer, and proto-fascist warmonger.
Oh my gosh, we can't wait to hear that.
Jerry, you're absolutely right. This story is unbelievable. There's a new book by Lucy Hughes Hallett, which is the biography of this Gabriele D'Annunzio, who is, like you said, is an Italian poet. And when you read this, it reads like a novel. And the author has actually had to say to people, like, this is actually real. Everyone's thinking, who is this guy? Why haven't I heard of him before? And, well, it's good that she wrote this down, because this guy is incredible. Listen to this guy's life. He wrote a volume of verse in his youth, right? And then he told newspaper editors that he died in some crazy traffic accident, a tragic riding accident, not traffic. And then, which made him instantly famous, and then his second novel appears on the shelves, and all of a sudden it's like he's alive.
This sounds like a game plan that we could use for Cyrus.
Haha, fooled you.
Yeah, let's do it. He went on to write, and he went to bed with various actresses and aristocrats. He failed to pay his hotel bills, and he eventually helped drag Italy into World War I.
Oh, well,
that's
done.
That's a lot on his plate.
Yeah, it's a lot on his plate.
Now, did they write poetry in bed, or what was involved there?
Yeah.
No, they started World War I in bed.
Yeah. They do say politics make for strange bedfellows.
They do. In 1919, D'Annunzio rebelled against the government. He seized a city in what is now Croatia and declared himself head of a new utopia.
Whoa.
Let's do that. Let's seize a part of Oregon and just, we have a new utopia.
We'll make the state of Jefferson.
Yeah. Why not? Unfortunately for him, it didn't work out.
Really?
And,
that didn't work?
I know.
Aww. Oh, man.
I totally could see that working out.
In his old age, he retreated to a grand Italian estate where he held court on the deck of half a battleship that had been dismantled and transported to the estate and reassembled on a hillside.
That's creative.
Are you making this up?
That's what's so awesome about this thing. Like, I cannot wait to read this. So it's an incredible book. It's called The Pike. And it recently won the 2013 Samuel Johnson Prize, which is Britain's leading award for nonfiction.
Well, if they called it nonfiction, it must be true. That's insane. That's beyond, that's like crazy. I mean, that, first of all, a battleship on a hillside.
I mean,
that doesn't make any sense. Who does that?
Sounds very creative.
Well, Cherry, what? That's in your bathtub, right?
Yeah. It's like, what's the difference between crazy and not crazy? Is he's on a battleship, I'm in my bathtub. So he looks like a statesman, and I'm a crazy person.
Oh, Britannia.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I do know what time it is. It's time to get the answers, everyone. And when I need to know, I go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. So listen up, higher education is coming our way. Now I love it. And, God bless America.
Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro, he knows. Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro, he knows.
That's right, I'm Jerry Renfro, and I'm the man in the know. You know, it's the beginning of the year again. It was 1 year ago this month that I started, and now you know, on this podcast, and I kind of wanted to revisit something that's very important to me, and that is the English language and the abuse that it continues to suffer every year.
Great topic.
Yeah. Have you guys seen The Princess Bride, the movie from Wallace Shawn's character keeps saying the word inconceivable, and Mandy Patinkin's character keeps telling him, I don't think that word means what you think it means. And that seems to happen a lot. And the English language is we borrow a lot of things from other languages. It's a young language in comparison to like Mandarin Chinese or, Greek, Latin that have been around for a long time. You know, like the Arabic gave us the words albatross, alcohol, and algebra. They all came from Arabic. And from French, we got debut, deploy, and disgust. And if your dad asked you to mow the lawn, you could thank the Celts for that because they gave us dad and lawn. So this flexibility gives us a lot of opportunities to really be specific and be understood by those around us, but it can also lead to misunderstandings and confusion. So here's a list of some words and phrases that tragically get misused all the time. The first one is, okay, you know Alanis Morissette, the singer? She did that song, Ironic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. The bad thing about that is nothing in that song is actually ironic.
Isn't that ironic?
Isn't that ironic? No, it's not. It's just a bummer. You know, if all you see is 10,000 spoons when what you're looking for is a knife, that's just bad luck. it's a coincidence. Ironic means something is contrary to what you were expecting. So if you opened a spoon drawer and found knives, that would be ironic. You see?
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, like a fat guy named Tiny. That's ironic, okay?
You know what? I got to stop you right there because you know what? I am one of those people of the masses who always use that word incorrectly and never really knew how it was supposed to be applied.
Yes. Something that was contrary to what you were expecting. So mocking someone for misusing the word irony and then misusing it yourself is itself ironic.
Mm.
Kind of a little inception moment there. The next time you feel sick to your stomach, please don't tell people that you are nauseous. You are nauseated. Nauseous means to make someone experience nausea. So if you tell people you are nauseous, you are saying that I make you sick.
Oh, no. So they ate something
that made them nauseated.
But they
the ate, thing they ate was made them is nauseous.
Nauseous. They ate something nauseous and made them nauseated.
Correct. Terrific does not mean something is great or awesome. It is something that inspires terror. Terrific.
That's I did not know
from.
That.
Yes. I misused
so
that
one. So it's something that inspires terror.
You're terrific. Jerry.
I know. And don't you forget it.
Whoa. I'm just telling you, I have used the word terrific my entire life. Like, oh, that's terrific.
Yeah. That's not what
it
means.
How many times have we said that? Like, you know, hey, we, you know, that was a, you know, that was a terrific story. Or, you know, mm-hmm. what a terrific song.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's another one that's really close to that. Bemused. What does bemused mean? Anyone? You think amusing, right?
I was going to say terrific.
No, no. Most people would say amusing, right? Yeah. Because they sound so similar, but they're not. Bemused means that something is confusing. I was bemused by that means I was confused by it.
Well, I have a question for you, Jerry.
Yeah.
Rob Lowe, you know.
The actor?
Yeah, the mm-hmm. actor. He's had a huge resurgence lately, kind of like you were talking about, Parks and Rec. Literally. Does he use that word correctly?
Oh, literally. That is the one that literally blows my brain out whenever I hear it.
No, it doesn't. It figuratively blows your brain out. And that's the problem.
Exactly.
So literally means something actually happened. So if somebody literally blew your brain out, your brain is laying on the floor. Figuratively is like an anecdote or, you know, it's like it feels like or seems like that happened. And now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
Look away from the sea. I can take you anywhere. Spin the vision with me. A chase with the wind. Move closer to me.
We talked to four members of Sun Crown in different regions of the world in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we are just really honored to have on four members from Sun Crown, and they are the international band. And today, right now, we are speaking with Kevin Ellerby, who is the guitarist in the band. Kevin, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so... Darren Crisp from Sun Crown. He is the lead singer from the group, the international group Sun Crown. Darren, first of all, welcome. And tell us a little bit about your new single, which is just like really ripping it up.
We just released a song called Just Like You.
Just Like You is the song that we're talking about. We're getting a lot of feedback from it because we are featuring it on our website. And it's just a beautiful song. Now, Kevin had told us that you had wrote that song. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it is. And, you know, it's just a sentiment that I just really believe in. And it's kind of at the core of, you know, my motivation to connect with all of our members around the world, you know, in the group. Just trying to underline that message of how we're all, you know, we share a lot more in life and consciousness than we don't share. You know, it's just interesting how, you know, there's so many issues in the world and at such a shallow level when, in fact, we're all very similar.
Yeah, you know, that's it's a great message and the lyric is great. We, you know, as a matter of fact, let's hear a little bit right now.
Just like you, I want to be glad.
Okay, you know, besides being a really beautiful song, Darren, I got to tell you, man, it's just the video to it, the way you guys shoot your videos, it's not just that video. A lot of your videos I've seen, it seems so seamless, you know, and like everyone is, you know, in the same room, on the same page, and, you know, when you know the backstory that everyone's in different countries and speaks different languages, it's just mind-blowing.
It's a lot of work. I think you can imagine it's so much different than you would a typical band where you go rehearse four nights a week and you're together all the time. Trying to manufacture that sound has been, it's quite a challenge if you can understand. So I appreciate that.
Well, that's cool that you feel that way. It's, you know, it's a work in progress. And on this album, you know, we were pretty fortunate to where the drummer, Tim Zeitberg, female singer Juliana Ferlani.
Olá, fãs do Brasil. Eu sou Juliana Furlani e estou hoje fazendo essa entrevista. Eu gostaria de agradecer a todos pelo grande apoio que vocês têm dado a nós e pelos views e pelas curtidas e por tudo.
And Kevin and I were all able to assemble at the studio and play live together, so we were able to capture video, you know, of us live in the studio, and we'll be releasing little, you know, videos of that experience on all the songs. Now we've got also Cinder in Norway, Oleg in Ukraine,
Oleg Biblich,
Ederson Prado in Brazil, that were not, and Uher in Turkey, that were not able to come here to America to record. So as you're referring to, we captured video from them in their location and just integrate it the best we can. And we have, you know, there's various technologies involved, some better, some not as good, whatever, doesn't matter. It's real and it's just the best we can do and from the heart. So
how did you get into this type of music?
Yeah, I always want to do part of music. I always liked to sing. And I sang on the church chorus. And I began on the music with a guitar and sing.
Well, you know what? I'm going to try to go inside on this, okay? For me personally, here's the thing. You know, I've always sang, but it's been a number of years since I had been in a group situation. I slowly found myself more and more isolated and just kind of composing and writing, you know, solo music and stuff. And woke up one day, felt a bit lonely. You know, it was catching up to me and just felt like, man, you know, I just wish I could share, you know, in this experience with somebody or whatever, you know, pretty classic. And I'm sure a lot of people out there in the world feel that way. And so I was on the internet and I happened along a piece of music, this wonderful symphonic piece of work that Oleg had done. I can't even remember, honestly, where I stumbled onto it. But I remember just really enjoying it and just haphazardly sent him a message just saying, boy, this your music is wonderful, Oleg. I'm a singer and I live in America. But boy, if you ever wanted any voice accompaniment, you know, with your music, you know, let me know. And he got back to me and kind of looked at some of the stuff I was doing and then he said, oh, that'd be great. So we just started making a few tunes and then slowly kind of reached out to other players and other interesting people that, you know, asking if they'd like to participate. And just lucky, I guess, you know, to wind up with a group of trusting, giving, expressive people that just, you know, wanted opportunity to do something bigger than any, you know, of ourselves. Which I really believe in, that, you know, if you've got a real team, you can do some special things. So,
well, wouldn't it be great if Sun Crown got to play the Olympics in Brazil?
Yeah, I'd like Sun Crown to play here on Rock and Rio would be great.
Yeah, that's quite a big event there, isn't it?
Yeah.
You guys have any plans on doing anything live as far as, you know, touring goes?
Absolutely aspire toward that. And we have some people working, for example, or, you know, attempting to see if we can't get on some kind of festivals in Europe next summer, just see if we can't put together, you know, 8-10 shows through some festivals or something, and then maybe fill some gaps at the local pubs, whatever. But
you know,
yeah,
that's a great idea. We had a woman that we went and saw live here, came to Oregon here, Pacific Northwest. Her and her husband, and they went on tour. They called it a Dreaming and Driving Tour. And they sold everything in Sweden. They bought an RV, and they traveled all across the United States.
That's awesome.
playing in venues. It started off small pubs and ended up being big, and now they're in Berlin, and Sylvia Tabak's their name, and they're doing, you know, very well musically.
That's fantastic. And is it more of a folk style, or?
Yeah, she had more of a folk style.
You know, it's interesting, because when you've got this, quote, this epic metal group, and much less producing this, quote, epic sound live, I mean, the production and all this, but I have faith. I mean, we're going to really, the key, I think, for us on that, and it falls on us, we need to be able to make strong enough music that resonates enough and enough people enjoy to where it'll just happen.
And, you know, from me being in Colorado, I don't know a lot about what the music industry is like in Europe, you know? So that's what's interesting about this music is it's a little bit different. But, you know, we're really hoping to bridge the gaps between countries. You know, we have this positive message that we're trying to present, not only for musicians, but for other people in these countries. You know, the people from Turkey right now are in a civil war. And, you know, most people are so isolated, they don't understand that. But, you know, we are connected. And through Suncram, we are connected. And what happens to us really affects each other. And we really try to let them know we stand by them, even though we're, you know, half a world apart, we're still trying to give them support, you know?
So good music for our fans and friends. It's an honor for us that they like it.
We hope so much this, and would be fun.
Have you been to Europe before?
Yeah.
And what's your favorite country in Europe?
Oh, I like Germany. I like England, but I never went there. But I like these countries. I want to meet there, to know there.
Well, you know, the proof is in the pudding, as they say, and the finished product is just wonderful. You know, your music is great. You know, I noticed you've done a couple of covers too. The first song I heard by Suncrown, well, it was a cover. The Gates of Babylon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and that just blew me away. I mean, it just really did.
Oh, that's awesome. That's cool. I'm sure glad it did. You know, I just have for the longest time, you know, since I was a kid, you know, admired Dio so much. And of course, you know, his voice speaks for itself. I mean, we all know the fantastic voice he had, but more than that, to me, is just his discipline, his work ethic, his just prolific, hard-nosed, tough-as-nails approach in over 50 years of effort. Yeah.
You know, that's really interesting, Darren, because the Ronnie James Dio, for all the listeners out there who we're talking about, he's the lead singer, great singer, same with Rainbow and Black Sabbath. You know, you mentioned that he's disciplined, and then when I thought this when he first joined Black Sabbath, I was like, wow, this is like, Black Sabbath has got to be one of the most undisciplined bands on the planet.
Right. Yeah. And you notice the shift in sound immediately with Heaven and Hell. How, well, wait a minute, all of a sudden these guys are all tight.
Yeah, they don't sound like they're playing in their garage anymore.
Right.
Well, Darren, it's been so cool finally catching up with you, and I know you guys have been busy, and we're going to tell our listeners out there to go to suncrown.com, and of course, they can find links to all of your videos and your music and on justimagineinc.com, and it's been really, really wonderful having you on. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Charlie.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Well, we wish you continued success. And I got to tell you, you know, I just love the Suncrown. You guys are just a very, very, very good band. And it just blows you away when you see it and you hear it.
To learn more about Suncrown, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com. Thank you.
Davey Copeland strives to make music without words for people to interpret in their own personal way. He talked about this and more with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we're really happy to have on Davey Copeland. He's coming to us from Hungary, Budapest, Hungary. He is a Canadian and a wonderful musician, and he has an album out now called It's Only Time. And so pleased to have you on, Davey. Thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot.
So you're in Hungary. Tell us, first of all, tell us a little bit about, you know, your, for our listening audience out there that may not know you, the music that you're doing and what you're doing right now to promoting it. I'm assuming that's what you're doing in Hungary.
Well, promoting it, you could say that. I spend most of my time out in the forest taking walks with the family collecting mushrooms. But but okay. Yeah, maybe I could be doing more to promote my music. Unfortunately, I'm pretty bad at doing that. But basically, I'm just here spending time with Susie's family and enjoying quite an unpleasant bit of weather.
Oh, I see. Well, it does get pretty cold over there.
Yeah, it does get quite cold, but it's nice. And it's a really warm family environment. And when you do as much traveling as I do, then this kind of thing can be quite...
So speaking of traveling, you know, it's almost the title of your album, your CD is It's Only Time. So that's almost like a time travel, because when you're listening to your music, too, it's just, you know, it draws you into, at least for me, you know, into another time, you know?
Oh, yeah, thanks a lot. I mean, I'll take that as a compliment, I suppose. It's largely experimental. I'm experimenting with unconventional rhythms, I suppose, and different combinations of guitar and violin. And yeah, maybe it comes from another time. I don't know. I like how it sounds. People have told me that it's kind of visual music, that when listening to it, the music conjures up various different images in their minds. I don't know if it had that effect on you. It may or may not have, but...
Well, no, that's an excellent description of it, because, you know, when I hear your music, don't take this the wrong way, but it's I don't really concentrate so much on the music. The music is so soothing and so inspirational. It just takes me somewhere off in my own head into a whole different dimension.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's entirely... I'd say a positive effect. So if I've achieved that, then my goal as a musician has been accomplished.
Yeah. First of all, you know, let's hear a little bit. Okay, so you see what I mean by that is when you listen to your music, Davey, it's like, as opposed to a lot of pop music and, you know, conventional music, for lack of a better term, you hear a song and it might be snappy, or you hear the lyric and you're trying to figure out what's the deep, dark meaning, you know, in behind this, and what is he trying to say, or what is she trying to say. And with your music, it's like you're just, you know, free to have your own interpretation.
Absolutely. One of the things that I don't like about contemporary pop music is that it tends to be very lyric-centric or lyric-focused and kind of dictatorial in its relationship with the audience. So I strive to make music without words that people can listen to and derive their own unique experience from.
Well, you know, I say mission accomplished. Now, you have several albums out. Now, tell us a bit about them and your recording process. And do you record in Canada or do you record around the world?
Yeah, I record wherever I happen to be. I've been traveling for almost 3 years now after having dropped out of university back in Canada. The first album, Unfinished Business, as the title suggests, it is largely composed of unfinished tracks. I was just learning how to record my own stuff at that point, so I didn't have much of the equipment that I have now, and much of it is kind of, you know, amateurish in terms of its production values, but at the same time, there's some interesting stuff there. The second one, Shadow Mountain, I recorded in Turkey beneath a volcano.
Oh, wow.
in Cappadocia. So that was quite an interesting place to record an album. And the songs on that sort of reflect the really interesting surroundings. And the latest one I recorded when I was staying with my girlfriend, Susie, with John Dodds in Bulgaria. We were volunteering and helping him run, you know, his garden. And in my spare time, I recorded that. It's only time. And so there you have it, all three.
Well, yeah, you know, John Dodds, Bulgaria. We don't know him as a gardener. We do know him as an author. But
yeah, absolutely. A great one, I might add. And a really just a sensational guy. And it was really nice to have met him and to have had the opportunity to spend such an extended period with him.
I'm surprised you didn't volunteer to play his harp on one of your tracks.
Yeah, well, actually, we did collaborate. And in fact, we recorded an interesting song that you can listen to called Guru Blues. It's one of John's compositions, actually. And it's you can listen to it on his website if you're interested.
So what do you do on all these travels? You know, I mean, are you just, you know, going to visit for the cultural experiences and then, you know, inspires you to do your music? Is there a driving force behind it? Like, you know, I wanted to do this. I always wanted to go to this country.
I'd say it was just an overwhelming dissatisfaction with my life as it was in university, which drove me to leave the country and go traveling. It wasn't so much that I wanted to see anything in particular, but it was just sort of I initially looked at it as you know, I'm leaving to find myself. Now I've realized that, you know, there's not really a self to find. So yeah.
Did you realize, Davey, that no matter where you are, there you are?
Exactly. That's it, man. So here I am, and I'll be somewhere else tomorrow. And that's that, really.
So what do you find different musically between, say, North America and Europe?
Musically different. Well, at the moment, I would say not, because, of course, there's a global obsession with American pop music and all of its derivatives. So really, in terms of the contemporary scene, I wouldn't say there's a great distinction to be made. But of course, if you go back historically, then you can, you know, go, for instance, in Budapest here, you can go to the opera for next to nothing, or to a classical music concert and have a thoroughly good time and participate in a cultural experience, which perhaps you might not have available in Oregon. But I don't know, because maybe you do.
No, well, actually, we wouldn't. We are a small community in the Pacific Northwest, but you could travel, you know, less than a few hours away and go to San Francisco and see the opera.
There you go.
So, but, you know, I mean, now you being as a Canadian, I mean, you have to be awfully proud of the Bieber, man.
Yeah, perhaps I do. I mean, I can't say that. I mean, I did come across some of his videos on YouTube the other day. And, yeah, he certainly has something going for him.
Well, I don't know. It just seems like, you know, a lot of the big acts in America are coming from Canada.
Right. Yes. Well, let's just think. Celine Dion. Do you know Celine Dion?
Celine Dion, she's French-Canadian.
She's French-Canadian. Neil Young is Canadian, was Canadian. Who else?
Justin Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
Avril Lavigne.
There you go. Yep. Yeah. There's something going on. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'd be happy to contribute myself to that.
And now Davey
pool
Coleman.
Of talent. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe you and the Bee will run into each other in your travels. I understand he travels extensively as well.
Yes, I'm sure he's touring. I don't know if my music has quite the mass appeal that his does, but...
Well, you know, I Mozart and Brahms said the same thing. And I'm sure there were people singing folk songs in the village at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, it's such a thrill to talk to you, you know, and I love your music, and it has quite a following. And we want to let all of our listeners around the world know, where can they find your music and where can they hear more?
They can go onto my Bandcamp website and they can listen to it there. It's davycopeland.bandcamp.com. And $1 of every sale goes to supporting the World Wildlife Fund of Canada. So enjoy it.
Oh, beautiful. Now, and we will also have all the links to Davy Copeland on justimagineinc.com, where he will be the featured musical artist. And we want to thank you so much, Davy, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Well, I'd like to thank you, too, and have a great day. As you would say, have a major league day.
Thank you so much. That's beautiful.
To learn more about Davy Copeland, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
I want right here. I need right here. I love right here. Early in the morning. I want right here. I need right here. I love right here. Early in the morning. What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do?
After the fall, Arthur Miller's famous autobiographical drama takes place inside the tortured mind of a 40-year-old lawyer. Quentin is haunted by his disastrous affair with a needy sex symbol, a character rumored to be based on Marilyn Monroe, Miller's second wife.
We visited a concentration camp in Germany. This woman, Holger, took me there. It's strange.
This is the room where they tortured them. No, I don't mind. I'll translate it.
Nothing in Europe, nothing in the world seemed quite this true.
It says, the door to the left leads into the chamber where their teeth were extracted for gold. The drain in the floor carried off the blood. At times, instead of shooting, they were individually strangled to death. The barracks on the right were the bordello where women...
I think that you've had enough, Holger.
No, if you want to see the rest.
Let's walk, dear. The country looks lovely out there. They sure built solid watchtowers, didn't they? Here, let's sit. This grass looks dry. I mean, it's strange. You know, I thought that this would make me angry or indignant, but it's more like a fact of nature.
Yes.
It's like swallowing a lump of earth.
I'm sorry. You still want to see Salzburg? I'd love to show you Mozart's house.
Was there somebody you knew died here?
Oh, no. I feel people ought to see it, that's all, and you seemed so interested. I've brought foreign colleagues once or twice.
You feel you understand this place?
I think we all do, but we don't dare admit it, or we would find it hard to go on living. The first time I came to America after the war, they held me 3 days for questioning. How could one be in forced labor and not be a communist or a Jew? There is something in this place that is terribly acceptable. But I didn't mean to depress you so. Lie down for a while and perhaps...
No,
you...
I'm
sorry.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to push you away.
I see wildflowers on the hill. I'll pick some for the car.
Holger, I...
Perhaps we've been together too much. I could rent another car at Linz. We could meet in Vienna sometime.
No, I don't want to lose you, Holger.
I hear your wings opening, Quentin. I'm not helpless alone. I love my work. It's simply that from the moment you spoke to me, I felt somehow familiar, and it was never so before. It isn't a question of getting married. I'm not ashamed this way. But I must have something.
I don't give you anything?
You give me very much. It's difficult for me to speak like this. I'm not a...
An L.A. theater works full cast performance featuring Amy Brenneman, Anthony LaPaglia, Amy Pietz, Amy Aquino, Gregory Itzen, Claudette Nevins, Natalia Nogolich, Al Ruscio, Raphael Sabarge, and Kenny Williams. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Like this don't happen anymore. I need to know, is it me? Can't get up.
Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook. And remember to get behind me.
Now stay there. People come and go.